Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hit the Bell with me, Matias Burbell. Awesome episode lined up for you guys today. First thing is first, Damon Martin joins the show today from MMAfighting.com. He is the editor and chief over at MMAfighting.com. Get ready, guys. UFC Paris, we're going to recap it. We're also going to preview UFC 293. Cannot wait for all of this. Some people are pissed off that this card is actually pay-per-view. I'll never complain about this type of stuff because I'm an MMA purist, man. I love MMA. And sure, when you look at the lineup, the UFC 293, is it the best card in the world when it comes to actually spending your money on it? No, it's not. But at the same time, when it's time to scrap, man, I'm feeling good. My blood is feeling good. It's rushing through my body. Doesn't matter who's fighting. I want to see somebody get hit in the face, and I'm ready to rock. You know, UFC 293 is going to be lit. So let's get going because we only have a certain amount of time, and it's time to rock, baby. Ladies and gentlemen, Israel Adesanya. Yeah! Main event against Sean Strickland. Let's go. Israel Adesanya right now, minus 650 going into this fight against Sean Strickland. Should it be higher? Yeah, possibly. It's a bad matchup for Sean Strickland, a guy who likes to win with volume, a guy who likes to move forward, a guy who's fearless most of the time when it comes to his fighting style. And that's just not the right type of way to fight against Israel Adesanya, who's one of the most accurate strikers in all of MMA. One of the most powerful and accurate strikers. Don't forget about that power, guys. He knows how to get the job done. Israel Adesanya, woo, can't wait to watch him fight. One of my favorite fighters in all of MMA since day one. Cannot wait for this fight. You know, there is some drama, and it's not with Sean Strickland and Israel Adesanya. I got to let you guys know right now, Izzy was on fire at the weigh-ins and at the ceremonial weigh-ins yesterday and at the press conference. The guy's ready to rock. Tai Tuivasa, plus 205 against Alexander Volkov, the co-main event. Woo! I love this fight right here, and I love the underdog. I'm going to tell you guys why later on in the show when I give you guys my picks, but Tai Tuivasa, plus 205. Man, I like him fighting at home. We move on. Manel Cape, minus 400 against Felipe Dos Santos. Manel Cape came in with some energy. I got to say, the guy came in with some energy. When you look at all the fights that has been canceled, you know, against Manel Cape, man, it's a long list. And if I was Manel Cape, I would have made some noise as well. Kai Kara France showed up to the ceremonial weigh-in. Kai Kara France showed up to the presser. Kai Kara France is supposed to be fighting Manel Cape. You know, so Kai Kara France, you know, he showed up and he was talking that smack to Manel Cape during the presser. Manel Cape went off. No better way of putting it. He went off, called him all sorts of names, throws a water bottle across the stage, misses Kai Kara France by a smidge. Israel Adesanya ensues to get up and tell Manel Cape to sit down, starts defending his city kickboxing boy. And then Manel Cape says, "Who the F are you? You sit the hell down." He wasn't even making any sense. He was going so fast. Manel Cape coming in with that energy. I hope he's focused on Felipe Dos Santos because I got to say, Felipe Dos Santos coming in at 7-0. He has that undefeated energy coming into this fight. And he was not afraid at the weigh-in. He was not afraid at the face-off. He came in with some energy. And a guy who's undefeated is supposed to come in with that undefeated energy. So it was good to see that. We move on. Manel Cape, I love him, minus 400. Parlay piece, I'll tell you with who. Coming down the line, Justin Taffa, minus 220 against Austin Lane at plus 180. Some people are going to think, didn't we just watch that fight? Yeah, we did. It was cut short. Austin Lane pokes Justin Toffa in the eye in round one early. And that fight comes to a close because Justin Toffa could not see. I remember in that fight, I was all pissed off at the ref because he was asking stupid questions, almost trying to make Justin Toffa fight. I still remember thinking to myself, the guy can't open his eye. Why are you asking him if he can fight? Stupid ass. You know what I mean? We move on. But before, hold on. I sound like Ted Lasso, you know, the dogs are in town. Dogs are in town. Dogs are in town. Let's go. Austin Lane plus 180. If you guys watch the beginning of this fight, when they fought for the first time, Austin Lane was connecting. Austin Lane had that footwork. Austin Lane had that speed, had that hand speed, had that accuracy. This is a scary fight for Justin Toffa. The dogs are barking. Hoo-hoo. That's right. That was weak. Hoo-hoo. There we go. Austin Lane plus 180. Let's go. Tyson Pedro, one of the scariest fights on this fight to start off the main card, minus 105 against Anton Turklage from Sweden. Anton, 8-2 coming into this fight, minus 115, a very small favorite, more of a pick'em, but this is a scary fight, guys. If Tyson doesn't get this fight, you know, done in round one, it never looks good for Tyson Pedro if he doesn't finish the fight in round one. Let's get real. And he hasn't been doing it lately. So a scary fight for Tyson coming up. We get to the main prelims. Carlos Blackjack Olberg against Dawoon Jung. Carlos Olberg at minus 280. I love Carlos Olberg, guys. I think he finishes his fight. This is a fun fight. I love Blackjack. Hell of a fighter. Hell of a striker. Dawoon Jung is not scared, though. This guy knows how to fight. This is going to be a fun fight. I wish it was on the main card, tell you the truth. Jack Jenkins, minus 210 against Chepe Mariscal. I love the dogs, baby. Plus 175. I'll tell you more about this down the line. Chepe is back, baby. Also, Jamie Mullarkey gets in there against John McDessie. Jamie Mullarkey, minus 270 against the Canadian. John McDessie, plus 220. The Pioneer. Man, this guy's been fighting for ages when you look at John McDessie. He ain't never scared to get in the octagon. Fun fight coming up. Nasrat Haqparast, minus 470 in there against Landon Quinones. Who? That's right, Landon Quinones. First UFC fight after he just gets done with the Ultimate Fighter. Landon Quinones was recently in the Ultimate Fighter. You know, he was on Team McGregor. He goes down in his first fight on the Ultimate Fighter. But Dana White says, you know what? I like you. Kid, get back in there. Plus 360 for Landon Quinones coming into his first UFC fight. Excited to see what he does in the octagon. I watched a lot of the Ultimate Fighter, so I kind of have like this like closeness to the fighters. You know what I mean? I'm feeling them out. I like them. I like the whole show. I like their personality. I guess I have some biased feelings going for Landon, but I'm still staying away. I don't care. Blood Diamond comes in at plus 260 against Charles Radke. Also, Shane Young, minus 155 against Gabriel Miranda. And also, Kevin Jussette, 8-2, the Frenchman, coming in against Kiefer Crosby at plus 130. Kiefer Crosby looked great today on the face-off. He looked ready to go. He looked ready to fight. He looked fearless in there. But guys, out of all these three fights I just said on the early prelims, the one who you have to pay attention to the most is Shane Young. I say that because he's 0-3 in his last three fights, and he came in overweight today at the weigh-ins by nearly 4 pounds. They almost scrapped the fight. Gabriel Miranda needs to get paid, so he says, screw it, we're doing this at catchweight. And he looks happy. That mustache looks frickly. It looks good. It looks ready to rock. How could you trust Shane Young? I know he's fighting at home. I don't care. You know, he comes in overweight, had a bad weight cut. He's 0-3 in his last three fights. That smells like danger to me. So, yeah, guys, you know, there's not much else to say about the early prelims except Gabriel Miranda is ready to rock and roll, and he made weight. We'll see what happens. Damon Martin is coming up right around the corner. We're going to break down UFC Paris that just happened this past weekend. Cyril Gane gets another victory. Look flawless in there against Sergey Spivak. And that's right, guys, UFC 293, Israel Adesanya, Sean Strickland. We're going to preview the card. We're going to talk about what's good on this card. And we're going to chop it up with Damon, man. I love talking to Damon Martin. And that's not it, guys. We're going to promote Damon's NerdcoreMovement.com. He is the owner and chief of the website where he talks about the coolest movies up to date. You know, if you like Spider-Man, if you like Aliens, if you like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, if you guys just like the coolest movies that are coming out to date today, Damon has you covered. And he's talking about it, and he's breaking down these movies and telling you which ones are good and which ones are not. So go check out NerdcoreMovement.com. Y'all stay tuned. Damon is right around the corner.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
What's up, fight fans? Welcome back to Hit the Bell with me, Matias Burbell. UFC 293 is upon us. We are rolling in hot, and I got the best man to talk things through, break things down, and also talk about UFC France, UFC Paris that we just had this past weekend. We have Damon Martin, the news editor at MMAfighting.com, and he is also the owner and editor at NerdcoreMovement.com. We are ready to chat MMA. What is going on, Damon? Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me, as always. I appreciate it.
Nah, man, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Big time things coming up this weekend. UFC 293, Israel Adesanya against Sean Strickland. But before we get to there, I got to get your opinion on what happened at UFC Paris. Big time fights this past weekend. The crowd, the arena, it was electric. You could feel the energy no matter what part of the world you were watching these fights at. It was amazing to watch. And I saw that you talked and you were interviewing people and were on top of this game. What did you think of Rose Namajunas? You know, before we get down to Cyril Gane, I know that the one of the biggest fights on the card was that Rose Namajunas, Manon Fiorot fight. Lots of talk afterwards. Rose breaks her finger, almost looks dislocated. Fiorot said that she's too small. Rose says she drops her. Man, what did you think of her performance? What do you think of this fight? What do you think of this division?
You know, I didn't think Rose looked bad, but I definitely thought Manon won. I mean, I scored it 30-27 watching the fight that day. I tweeted about it. I didn't really see a lot of controversy. I know I saw a couple of people say they thought Rose won. And listen, you know, it was a good fight, but I didn't see a world where Rose won that fight. I don't think she looked – I was a little surprised that she didn't look as outsized as I thought she would. Manon Fiorot, I've met Manon. I've been at a couple of her fights. And she's a pretty big flyweight, and I was actually a little bit impressed by Rose's size. I thought Rose would be giving up a lot of size at flyweight, and she didn't look that much smaller, so I was pretty impressed by that. So it's unfortunate what happened with her finger. You know, that does affect you, and you know, like it or not, that definitely affected her in that fight, but that's also the game. That's fighting. You know, things like that happen. Cuts happen. Hands broken. Those things happen. So I thought Manon won, but I'm not totally against Rose fighting a flyweight. I just thought it was an odd choice because she has 2 wins over the current champion at strawweight. So I just kind of imagined she'd want to go back and do that again. But I appreciate her saying she doesn't want to cut the weight. She's kind of been there, done that. And I dig that. I dig her going for new challenges. And you know, we'll kind of have to wait and see what's next for her.
What did you make of Trevor Whitman not being in her camp? I know she came out and said that, you know, he was getting Justin Gaethje ready and she didn't want to interfere. Do you think she made the right decision on actually taking this fight, knowing that Whitman might not be in her camp with everything going on? It seems like Trevor Whitman is like the guru in there when it comes to fighting. You know, if he's in your corner, there's a good chance you could win. You know, he's a great X's and O's guys, but he also just brings a presence to that locker room when you're preparing for the fight. You know, was that a mistake by Rose?
You know, I don't want to brand anything as a mistake or not. I mean, Rose knows what she needs. Rose is a veteran. She's been around a long time, and a lot of people like to criticize Pat Barry, who, you know, stepped in as her coach, who is also, of course, her boyfriend. I always think that dynamic's a little weird, you know, when husbands and wives or boyfriends and girlfriends or fiancés, whatever, are the main corner. I always feel it's a weird dynamic. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of that, but I also understand some fighters enjoy that. That just happens to be the dynamic that works for them. So it is what it is. Do I think, you know, Trevor Whitman can make a difference? Well, sure. Trevor Whitman's an incredible head coach. And, you know, we've seen the work he's done with guys like Justin Gaethje and Kamaru Usman and guys like that. So is it going to be an asset to have Trevor Whitman there? Sure. But Rose knows what she needs. Rose has been around for a long time. You know, she's not a 3-0 fighter, you know, fighting in the UFC for the fourth time and has never been here before. She's been here and done that. So I don't think it was the reason between, you know, victory and defeat that Trevor wasn't there. Honestly, certainly not making excuses. Again, Mano won the fight. I had her winning 30-27, even in the first round when Rose had her, you know, had her finger intact. But I really do believe the dislocated finger played a much bigger factor in Rose's performance than anything Trevor Whitman would have coached her on during that fight. I think, you know, when you're fighting one-handed or, you know, your finger's mangled, you can't grapple, you can't make a fist, that's gonna affect you far more than whatever advice Trevor was going to give her.
We are talking to Damon Martin. He is a news editor at MMAfighting.com, also the owner and editor at NerdcoreMovement.com. We are chopping up UFC Paris right now. We are about to get the UFC 293, but first things first, the main event in France, in Paris, was, I don't want to say it was phenomenal because it was short-lived. You know, it was an ass-whipping by all effects. You know, Cyril Gane showed up ready to rock. I know that his house got robbed during his fight, which is unfortunate, man. That's just bad news bears for Cyril Gane. But Sergey Spivak took a major ass-whipping. He turned into a punching bag. You know, the entire fight, Sergey Spivak just looked off. And if you ask me, when I saw him walking out of, you know, out through the doors into the octagon, you know, even into the arena, he almost had that Megan Anderson look, in my opinion. He almost looked a little, not scared, because you're not going to be scared as an MMA fighter, you know, but he looked insecure, to put it lightly. He looked like he had a face that pretty much, maybe the crowd was too much for him, maybe the whole atmosphere, maybe it was just Cyril Gane. You know, the guy's a scary dude, but he was very dominant in there this past weekend. And a lot of people, Damon, thought that Spivak was going to grapple him, take him to the ground, destroy him. And the opposite happened. Gane destroyed him. What did he think of Spivak in his performance? And better yet, what did he think of Gane in his performance?
You know, Cyril Gane looked good. You know, I won't say it was totally unexpected, because that, you know, that was kind of the way I thought that fight would play out. Cyril's got, you know, solid takedown defense. He's fast on his feet. And Sergey, while he does have incredible submissions and he had a bit of a win streak going into the fight, you know, he's not exactly the most prolific wrestler or, you know, takedown artist. So I'm not surprised by the way it played out. I said this on my podcast I do with Matt Brown, The Fighter versus the Writer. We talked about it on this week's show. And I said, I didn't learn anything about Cyril Gane from this fight that I didn't already know. You know, he's a good striker. If you can't take him down, he's going to give you a lot of problems on the feet. He's a great boxer, really fast hands, all those kind of things. So, you know, yeah, I mean, again, I'm not taking away what Cyril Gane did. It was a great win, and definitely bouncing back from the loss to John Jones and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I didn't learn anything about Cyril Gane that I didn't already know. Now, if he goes and fights a guy like Tom Aspinall next, then we're going to find out a lot, because Tom Aspinall is incredibly well-rounded, heavy hands, great grappling, incredible submissions. That is a serious test, and then we're going to find out how much or how little Cyril Gane has grown or evolved from the losses to Francis Ngannou and the loss to John Jones. That's the fight I want to see, and I hope happens. But again, great win, huge crowd, awesome to see him fight in Paris. Obviously, unfortunate his house got robbed. But in all honesty, I didn't learn anything about Cyril Gane that I didn't already know.
It surprises me that so many odds makers in Vegas actually thought that Spivak would actually destroy Gon. And I liked Gon the whole way, just like you. I thought that that was going to go exactly how it went. And I was surprised that so many people thought the opposite. You know, Ciryl Gon is a world-class fighter. And I know that he had a bad bump against Jon Jones. But, man, that's Jon Jones. You know, who doesn't have a bad bump against Jon Jones? So Ciryl Gon really climbing the ranks. I like how you brought up Tom Aspinall. You had me daydreaming while you were talking, man. I'm thinking, oh, my God, what a great fight that would be. And you're right. We would learn so many things about both fighters in this fight. And just for the hell of it, I got to ask you, if this fight was to happen this weekend, you know, daydreaming right now, who would you pick, Damon? Would you have Gon or would you have Aspinall?
I'd probably lean towards Tom Aspinall. I'm a big believer in Tom Aspinall. I think he's probably, along with Sergey Pavlovich, the other, you know, top heavyweight coming up. Obviously, also to mention Jonathan Almeida, he's incredible. But Tom Aspinall is going to be a tough out for anybody in that division. I think him and Sergey Pavlovich down the road will be a banger. Just Sergey hits so hard. That guy is just a monster. But yeah, I like Tom Aspinall. I feel like Ciryl Gon. You know, he's a good fighter. Not making any mistakes about how good he is. But I feel like Ciryl Gon is that guy who kind of sits at like number five in the division, number four, number five. He's really good. He's gonna just lay waste to the Sergey Spivaks, the Marcin Tybura's of the world. But then when he gets that top three, he might struggle a little bit more, as we saw with Ngannou, as we saw with Jon Jones. So I do like Tom Aspinall to win that fight. And I think, again, Ciryl Gon, same kind of thing. Like, I think he needs to fight Tom. He needs to fight Curtis Blaydes. He needs to fight Jailton Almeida, these guys who are high-level grapplers who could get him down, and can he survive on the ground with them? Because, you know, I talked to Curtis Blaydes after the Jon Jones fight, and Curtis said, yeah, Ciryl Gon doesn't have a grappling game. He's not good at grappling. He's not good at grappling. Now, grappling and takedown defense are two different things. You can have good takedown defense. Doesn't mean you have great defensive grappling. I like Ciryl Gon. I think he's a very good fighter, but I think against those high-level, really world-class grapplers like Almeida, like Blaydes, and like Aspinall, I still can't believe he won't struggle, at least until he proves me wrong.
I'm right there with you, man. Until he proves us wrong. Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. Fun stuff with both fighters. Daydreaming all the way around. Gon, Aspinall. The heavyweight division is fun right now. That's for damn sure. I just can't wait to see Jon Jones and Stipe Miocic get in there now. You know, before we get to UFC 293, since we're in this heavyweight division, what do you think about that fight? What do you think of Jon Jones and, I guess, arguably the best heavyweight to ever live in the division, and Stipe Miocic? Who you got?
You know, it's an interesting one, because I've said on the record 1,000 times, and I'll continue to bang the drum for this until the day I stop covering the sport, that Jon Jones is the greatest mixed martial artist in the history of our sport, not only in terms of accomplishment, but in terms of talent. You know, George St. Pierre is incredible. Demetrius Johnson, I just talked to him about a half hour ago. He's obviously amazing, but I don't think anybody is better than Jon Jones. Jon Jones is the greatest of all time. He is the Michael Jordan of our sport. That being said, Stipe Miocic does present problems that a guy like Ciryl Gon didn't at heavyweight. Stipe is a really good wrestler. He was a college wrestler, Division I at Cleveland State. He's also a Golden Gloves boxer. We know he has one-punch knockout power. I think he presents a lot of interesting problems for Jon Jones that he didn't face against Ciryl Gon in his heavyweight debut. That being said, listen, I'm an Ohio guy. I love Stipe. I've been around Stipe since before he was in the UFC, when he was fighting out here in Ohio in the regional promotion. So I'm always going to be a Stipe guy. But I have a hard time picking against Jon Jones, against anybody. That's not a Stipe Miocic question. That's anybody. I would pick Jon Jones to beat Stipe. I would pick him to beat Ciryl Gon. I would pick him to beat Tom Aspinall. I will pick him to beat Francis Ngannou. Jon Jones, to me, until someone finally puts him away, I'll never pick against that guy. He's amazing. He's the best mixed martial artist in the history of the sport. And until he retires, I just don't see anyone being on his level.
Well, it's hard to go against him after what he did to Ciryl Gon so quickly. You know, what an amazing thing to watch when they fought. I we have to wonder what's going to happen with this fight when they do fight. And it's exciting stuff, because this is the best part about our sport, about MMA, is that you truly never really do know. You know, the biggest surprises could come at any moment. And next thing you know, everybody's just left stunned. You know, a lot of people had Aljamain Sterling, you know, being the human backpack, getting on top of, you know, Sugar Show O'Malley, choking him out the same way that he did to Sanhagen. And next thing you know, we're seeing Sterling get knocked out the same way Marlon Moraes, you know, knocked out Sterling, just stunned out cold. Crazy things happen. But we got to move on with Damon Martin. But, you know, one last thing, because a lot of things have happened this week around the world of MMA. And this one was kind of a big deal after Tuesday night's Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, where we saw Dana White go after Bellator. You know, it was kind of weird. It was kind of emotional, if anything. When I saw his reaction, it almost looks like he's angry. It almost looks like an ex-girlfriend that gets brought up in the middle of the dinner table and the guy just starts talking crap about her and how bad his life has been, you know, with that ex-girlfriend. It was like the same thing. Dana White just says, you know, why on God's green earth would anybody want to fucking buy Bellator? You know, Bellator, what a great sell. Oh, $500 million, what? Just complete clowning them, you know, destroying them, in my opinion. What did you make of him going at Bellator after Alex Bohunin asked a pretty good question? You know what I mean? Everybody wants to know what's going to happen with Bellator with the rumors about PFL probably buying them. But, that, you know, who knows what's happening? What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, Dana, this isn't the first time Dana said that kind of thing about a rival promotion. And I'm certainly, you know, it certainly won't be the last. I mean, part of what Dana said is true when he talked about the business of it. He said, you know, there's businesses and there's charities. He talked about that. And what he means is profit. You know, are these promotions turning a profit? And you could probably argue that out of all the major mixed martial arts promotions out there, the only one that's really turning a profit, a big profit, is the UFC, and that we have the records to back that up on the spreadsheets that come out every time Endeavor, the owner of the UFC, puts out, you know, their filings with the SEC. We see how much money they're making. Huge revenue, huge profits. We've not seen that from hardly any other mixed martial arts organization out there. We see them funneling a lot of money into it, but not really getting a return on that investment. And that's why we've seen so many other organizations go out of business, because it's not easy to succeed. And it's certainly not easy to find long-term success. So what Dana said isn't totally untrue, because he's right. Like, we can see the balance sheet of a lot of these promotions, the money they're sinking in versus the money that they're getting back out. It's also been well documented that Paramount, the parent company that owns Bellator, has really been looking to dump a lot of stuff off their balance sheets. They were talking about selling BET not that long ago. They've sold other assets. I'd have to imagine that Bellator is not a huge moneymaker for them. I don't think it's a black hole. I don't think they're just funneling money into it and not getting anything in return. But that's the problem. Is, like I said, you have to understand to make it in this sport, you're going to have to invest, and there's going to be losses along the way. I'd say PFL's in the same boat. Like, I don't know, you know, when you're paying out $1 million to six tournament winners, you're paying Kayla Harrison, you're paying all these other fighters, And we see the crowds, we understand there's media rights with ESPN, all these kind of things, but at the end of the day, are you turning a profit? Chances are probably not, but that's also business. We also understand you have to continue to work at it, and eventually you'll turn a profit. You become a profitable company. So what Dana said's not wrong when he turned about Bellator, and he said $500 million or whatever seems a little ridiculous. I don't necessarily disagree with him there. Bellator is viable, though. In my opinion, Bellator has the second best roster of fighters in mixed martial arts. I mean, right now, I would argue Bellator has the best roster they've probably ever had when you look at top to bottom and all their fighters they have. So where I disagree with Dana is saying there's no value there. Like him saying, why would anyone buy Bellator? Well, you buy Bellator because you want the roster of fighters, and that's why the PFL would want to buy the roster of fighters, because while I do enjoy what the PFL does, and I love a lot of the fighters over there, they have a lot of talent over there, Bellator's deeper, okay? Bellator is deeper. Bellator has better overall fighters. You talk about Yaroslav Amosov. You talk about, Johnny Eblen. You talk about, going on down the line, the list of guys. I mean, Usman Nurmagomedov could be maybe the second best lightweight in mixed martial arts right now, behind his teammate and friend Islam Makhachev. He fights in Bellator. That's a guy. I mean, you get that guy, that's not a big deal. So I disagree with Dana that it's not worth anything. I just don't know if it's worth $500 million. And I also understand that contracts, things like that. Like, if you're going to buy Bellator and you can immediately absorb all the contracts, you have Usman, and you're going to have Johnny Eblen, and you're going to have Nemkov, Vadim Nemkov, all these guys under contract, then there's the value. But if that all gets voided or whatever else is going on, if you're just buying the brand name of Bellator, then I understand where Dana's coming from.
Oh, man, you are spitting it, Damon. I love it, man. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of college athletics. It reminds me of the University of Hawaii, Mike, for goodness sake. You know, talking about all the sports that all these universities have, more than likely, the only sport that actually profits out of all these schools is football. Football always profits. Everything else loses money unless we're talking University of North Carolina basketball or something like that. You know, it's just wild stuff when it comes to these entities and where the money goes and who profits and who doesn't. Just nuts stuff. And I'm sure a lot of people actually don't know that, what you just said, that UFC is probably one of the only, you know, MMA promotions that actually profits out of their business and doesn't just stay stable, which is nuts stuff to actually think about, because I guarantee people don't know that. You know, people probably think that Bellator, PFL, one championship, you know, Cage Warriors, they probably think they're making tons of money. You know, that, like they say, you could leave the UFC and go get paid, right? Well, that's not always a sure thing, man. We move on to UFC 293 coming up this Saturday in Australia. Big time card for some. You know, some people are going to say it's a lackluster card. I don't like to think that way, because usually when people think that these cards are so lackluster, they turn into some of the most violent cards of the year. And when I see this card right now, I see violence, Damon. I see pure violence. You know, I see Blood Diamond. I see Hak Paras. I see Jamie Malarkey. I see Chepe Mariscal, Carlos Olberg, Tyson Pedro, Justin Taffa. You know, these guys kill. These guys are killers. These guys punch hard. They finish fights. I think that we're going to see a short-lived amount of fights, you know, coming this Saturday. But first things first, Israel Adesanya, Sean Strickland. Lots to be said about this matchup. We've seen some small-time antics. We've seen Sean Strickland tell the world that he punched some Israel Adesanya fan in the stomach when he was getting into Australia because they said something about him getting his ass kicked to Adesanya. Now, we also saw him do an open sparring with a fan. And I gotta say, he clocked him twice decently. You know, nothing major, but he did clock him twice. You know, did the whole Sean Strickland thing. And then he also called Izzy spineless, a spineless man. We're not going to get much more out of that, man. But what do you think of this fight? It's a weird fight week, in my opinion. You know, weird. It's a weird Israel Adesanya fight week. It feels like we just got to get this over with. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I understand, like, the card itself is fun, but it's not, it's a card that you really, really have to stretch to justify paying $80 for. That's the reality of UFC 293. Now, Israel Adesanya is a star. He's going to sell this card. No offense to Tai Tuivasa and Alexander Volkov and Manel Kopp, who I'm a massive fan of. If people are plunking down $80 for this fight card, they're plunking it down to watch Israel Adesanya go out and do his thing. He's a minus 600 favorite. I would argue he should be a minus 800 or 1,000 favorite. Sean Strickland's certainly not a bad fighter. He's the top 10 middleweight for a reason. But Sean Strickland is stylistically a nightmare. Let me reverse what I was saying there. Israel Adesanya stylistically is a nightmare for Sean Strickland. Sean Strickland moves forward and he throws in volume. Moving forward on Israel Adesanya is like stepping out into traffic and hoping good things are going to happen when there's a semi truck coming towards you. Okay. It's not going to end well. Israel Adesanya is a sniper and a nasty counter striker. What Sean Strickland does plays exactly into Israel Adesanya's game. The other side of that is if Sean Strickland tries to do something else, like maybe sit back and wait for Israel Adesanya or tries to wrestle him, then we might end up with a 50-45 decision or maybe not the most exciting fight in the world, but I think the outcome is still the same. Israel's just a better overall fighter. And, you know, when you look at what Strickland has done his last two fights, you know, he beat Abbas Megamedov, a guy who probably had no business being in there with him at that point. And he beat Nasruddin Imavov, who's a pretty solid middleweight. But again, he's, you know, fringe top 15. He's getting this by default. Let's all be honest about this. Sean Strickland is getting this title shot because Dricus du Plessis had a foot injury and he couldn't turn around from July to fight in September. That's it. That's the he is getting this title fight because he was available. Now, that's not the best reason necessarily to get a title fight or to believe this guy can win a title fight. Of course, it's MMA. Anything can happen. We'll say that 1,000 times over. When you don't think something can happen, it can happen. Could Sean Strickland go out there and shock the world? Absolutely, he could. Do I expect that to happen? No. Do I believe that will happen? No. Would I put money down on that happening? Absolutely not.
No, you're right, man. And when I think about this fight, you're right. I think about Sean Strickland just going up and throwing with volume. But then again, I guess that leads to death, you know? So if people think he's going to try to grapple with him and take him down, I don't know what the hell to think of Sean Strickland. You know, when he fought Alex Pereira, Alex said that he kind of feared Sean Strickland a little bit based off of his persona, based off of just how much of a jokester he is and how just, you know, how much of an off weird guy that he can be, you know, 90% of the time. But once that cage door closed and once he walked in through the cage, Pereira said he saw a man that he's never seen before in his life and he didn't know what to expect. You know, that's like the one thing I could say about Sean Strickland is he keeps you off balance. You know, he doesn't keep you balanced throughout fight week. He doesn't keep you balanced throughout his fight when you fight him. He's a guy that you really, he's very unpredictable when it comes to some things, especially when it comes to his persona. You know, I wonder if this has an effect on Izzy whatsoever, you know, when Sean walks through the cage doors and you know, Izzy's never fought Sean before at the end of the day. So we're going to see something that we haven't seen before. You know, we could say this and we could say that, but man, Sean Strickland, at the end of the day, is a very, very good fighter, like you said. So, interesting fight, man. Do I think Israel is going to win? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to land a shot that's just going to drop Sean? I do. He's an accurate striker. He's a powerful striker. He's one of the best martial artists I've ever seen in my life. And that's not what Sean Strickland is. Like you said, Sean Strickland is a guy who likes to bang. You know, he likes to go forward. He likes to hit you. He likes to out-hustle you the same way that he beat Abus Magomedov. You know, just drained him out. You know, drained him out against the fence, chased him down until he passed out. And that's just the way that it goes. More things revolving, you know, in this division was Israel Adesanya kind of calling out DDP, Dricus du Plessis, saying that he calls the shots, not Dricus du Plessis. And then he kind of reverted to Paulo Costa and Khamzat Chimaev, saying whoever wins that fight might even get the title shot over Dricus du Plessis. And then Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, we saw reports that Dana said, you know how I feel about people not taking fights. But at the end of the day, Damon, how could you take away this fight from Dricus du Plessis? It sells. You know, money talks, and this is a business. And then when I see Dricus du Plessis versus Israel Adesanya, I see one of the biggest pay-per-views of the decade. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but I actually had this conversation with Israel a week and a half ago, and we did an interview, which you can actually listen to on MMA Fighting. I asked him that very question about Dricus, because this sport is all about timing and opportunity. Now, I certainly don't believe that Dricus should have taken this fight compromised. That he fought in July, he knocked out Robert Whittaker, incredible performance. But they asked him to turn around and fight again in 2 months. It wasn't fair when they did that to Aljamain Sterling. I certainly don't think that's why Sean O'Malley knocked him out. I just said it wasn't fair to ask a guy who just did 5 rounds against Henry Cejudo in May to say then turn around and fight in August. And I don't think it was fair for the UFC to book Dricus in July and then say, hey, turn around and fight 2 months later. That being said, this sport is all about timing and opportunity. That's how this happens. And the reality is this. Khamzat Chimaev is a massive star in his own right. If he goes out there and beats Paulo Costa, submits him, knocks him out, looks great doing it, do not be the least bit surprised that he jumps in front of Dricus and gets the next title shot. And I'll be honest, as much heat as there was between Dricus and Israel when they had the stare down, and we know the history and the conversation about the real African fighter, whatever you want to call it, yes, bad blood sells. The rivalry sells, all that. And if they put that fight in Africa, it will be huge, okay? But Khamzat Chimaev is a bigger star. Khamzat Chimaev is a more well-known name overall than Dricus du Plessis. That's not a knock on Dricus. I would put Khamzat in that top 10 fighters that people just know. He became a massive name and a massive star right after he arrived in the UFC. If he can go out there and lay waste to Paulo Costa, which is certainly not a guarantee, but if he does, I would not be shocked in the least that he gets the next title shot, because Khamzat versus Israel, you could put that in Vegas, It's going to sell out. It's going to sell a lot of pay-per-views, and people are going to want to watch that fight. So it's not a knock on Dreykus. I do believe he should get the next title shot. He has clearly earned it, because when you beat Robert Whittaker, that means something. That's a big deal. But I'm just playing devil's advocate here. 1 month from now, we're prisoners of the moment in the sport. If Khamzat beats Paulo Costa, I will not be the least bit surprised if he goes out there and Khamzat ends up fighting Israel Adesanya in 2024.
Man, Damon, I got to say, I've been defending Dreykus with this for a long time. And even this morning when I was thinking about, you know, how to present this to you and whose side I actually really take, I'm always siding with Dreykus for the same reason that you actually just stated, which was he beat Robert Whittaker. You know, he beat the Grim Reaper that nobody could beat unless your name is Israel Adesanya. And when you do that, I think that holds a tremendous value. But then you brought up just now how much bigger of a star Khamzat Chimaev is. And I've never actually realized how big of a star he is over there in Europe. I'll be honest with you. I know that he's a star. I just didn't know how big of a star he is. And now that you actually brought this up, and I'm thinking to myself, holy smokes, you're 100% right. When I go to Instagram right now, Dreykus Duplessis has 214,000 followers. That's a lot of followers. That's a hell of a lot of followers. But then when you type in Khamzat Chimaev, he has 5.9 million followers. Holy smokes. That's not even comparable. That's in a different galaxy, Damon. Jesus.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, listen, and listen, if Khamzat wins, I mean, you can't deny he would be right there. I mean, you know, again, Paulo Costa, you know, is a really good fighter. He's a really good middleweight. If he beats Paulo Costa, you can't say he didn't deserve, you know, that recognition. But again, I say it all the time in this sport. If you want to stay sane in mixed martial arts, strike the word deserves from your vocabulary, because it'll drive you lunatunes. And the reality is, Khamzat beats Paulo Costa, he is a bigger star. Star power matters, and when you're a business, as we talked earlier, you're in the business of making money. Khamzat versus Israel is a bigger fight. It will make more money. That is a fight you could put in Las Vegas. It will sell a crap load of tickets, and it will sell a crap load of pay-per-views, because Khamzat is a bigger name. He's a bigger star. That's not a knock on Dreykus, and it certainly doesn't diminish Dreykus truly, quote-unquote, deserving the shot. He did. But that's just the nature of this beast. That's the reality. That's why I always say Conor McGregor is always one win away from being from fighting for a title again, because he's Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor lives under a different set of rules than everybody else in the sport. I'm not saying Hamzat's at that level, but you mentioned it. 200,000 followers versus 5.9 or whatever. That's insane. That's like, as you said, a whole other galaxy. That tells you right there. Khamzat tweets. Khamzat puts an Instagram message out about Israel after that fight. It's going to blow up, and everyone's going to be talking about it. Dreykus Duplessis does the same thing. Will we talk about it? Will we buzz about it? Sure. In our inner circle, yes. Will it permeate the bigger pop culture cycle? Will TMZ be talking about it? Will, you know, other sports entities be talking about it? Probably not, but they'll talk about Khamzat, and that's the difference.
Oh, this is exciting stuff, man. It's super exciting. And you know what, for us fight fans, this only just makes our blood, you know, flow through us even quicker than it already is, Damon, because man, you're all these fights are bangers. And you just thinking about that star power versus star power, Khamzat versus Israel Adesanya. I'm sure Dreykus Duplessis is actually feeling a little bit insecure right now, sitting at home in South Africa thinking, holy smokes, I thought I played it right. Maybe I didn't play it right, but we're going to find out and see. Before we let you go, man, I got to get you and your opinions about NerdcoreMovement.com. Damon Martin is the owner and editor at NerdcoreMovement.com, guys. He's not just all about MMA. He's all about even better, man, about the superheroes, Spider-Man, Alien. Go check out NerdcoreMovement.com whenever you can. Go check out Damon's work. It's always fun stuff to read, man. There's been a lot of great movies out lately, Damon. In my opinion, we've had some fun ones like Blue Beetle, for example, the Last Voyage of the Demeter with, you know, the whole Dracula thing. But I got to get your take on a movie that did very, very well, which is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. You know, what did you think of the marketing behind it? What did you think of just the success that this Ninja Turtles movie had, man? It's wild.
It's pretty awesome. You know, I'm a big fan of Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, the guys who were behind the movie as producing partners. They produced probably my favorite show on television, The Boys. And they do a tremendous job. And you know, every single person I spoke to that has seen that movie says the exact same thing I would say, which is that movie is so much more fun than it has any record. It's so much more fun than it should be. Like, it's just a fun movie. I grew up on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon when I was a kid. So I loved the original movie that came out, the live action movie that came out back in the 90s. I was a little kid. I was way into that. So all the movies, but this was just, it's just way more fun than it has any reason to be. Like, it's just that kind of movie. People are attaching. There's a whole new generation of people discovering the turtles for the first time. Yeah, it's fun, man. Like I said, I think that's, it's the same thing. Like, it's a good story. It's a fun animation, a fun way to display it. And I say this, like, because I'm a massive fan of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse and more recently Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Like, they're, you know, more adult-themed stories, but still appeal to a kid audience. And it works really, really well. And I think we're seeing that with those kind of films where it appeals to a much broader audience. You're not just appealing to children. You're not just appealing to adults. You kind of get that crossover, and that's when you really do kind of see better films. And I think that's what we saw with the Turtles movie, and I think that's what we've seen by two incredible Spider-Verse movies.
No, I'm with you 100%. You made me feel nostalgic just now because I'm just like you, man. I love Ninja Turtles growing up. I grew up with the cartoon. I loved every single movie. I don't miss them. And this one kind of fell a little under the radar for me, to tell you the truth. And I just watched it a couple days ago, and I fell in love with it, man. I love the intro. I love the music behind it. I love the animation. I love that they actually had kids playing the voices of the turtles and not some old man. You know, it was all fun. It was all good stuff.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you are sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
And guys, again, if you guys want to know more about these badass movies and about all of Damon's inside work, go check out nerdcoremovement.com. Damon has us ready to roll with every single badass movie coming up now and in the future. But also MMAfighting.com, guys. Don't get that twisted. You can follow Damon on Twitter at Damon Martin, the news editor at MMAfighting.com, and also the owner and editor at NerdcoreMovement.com. Damon, it's always a blast having you on, man. I can't wait to talk to you again about cartoons, superheroes, and best of the MMA world, man. Thanks so much for coming on Hit the Bell. You're the best.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Talk soon.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network. You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Burbell on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Welcome back to Hit the Bell with me, Matias Burbell. We are nearly done with this episode, man. We rolled right through this. Damon Martin from MMAfighting.com is the man. We got you ready for UFC 293. I gave you guys some top-notch information from NerdcoreMovement.com. Go check out that new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. It was on fire, but now it is time for my best bets. Let's go. First thing is first, I'm going to give you guys a minus 110 parlay. That's right, a minus 110 parlay. Here are the pieces. Manel Cape at minus 425. Carlos Blackjack Ulberg at minus 300. And also Israel Adesanya at minus 700. Right now, if you put down $100, that will pay out $88. So Get it there before it gets any higher, because I could see that price from Izzy going up. I say that because right after the weigh-ins, Sean Strickland did not look very happy. He complained about how hard it was to cut that extra pound, that championship weight. He is not used to that. He was massively dehydrated. And he even attempted to give an interview, you know, from the UFC. And man, they couldn't even ask him anything. You could just tell that it was just pretty much, he did not want to do the interview. He could barely hear the questions. He was pissed off. He was angry. He did not want to be there. But he did not fail to mention how bad that weight cut was, especially with that extra pound. That just means another thing, man. That was a terrible weight cut. It was grueling, a grueling weight cut for Sean Strickland. You could just tell. And that's not good, man. Izzy, he's done this a lot. You know, how many times has he defended the belt? How many times has he been, you know, how many years has he been champion for? This is his forte. This is his bread and butter. He has Sean Strickland right where he wants him. So that's why I'm putting in a minus 700 piece into a parlay. I don't like to put big pieces like that into parlays, but at the same time, we needed to get this number up. And that's how we did that. Also, we got some dogs. We got some dogs, and I like the dogs right now. Here are three dogs for you that I am feeling out. Tai Tuivasa at plus 205 against Alexander Volkov. It will be done in one. I don't know if it'll be done in the first round, but it will be done after one shot. Tai Tuivasa will land that right hand, and he will knock down Volkov, and that will be it. Lights out for Alexander Volkov. Plus 205, Tai Tuivasa right down there in his home. Fans in his back pocket. He's ready to rock. So Tai Tuivasa plus 205, let's dance. Also, Austin Lane plus 190. This was a hard pick for me to make. Why? Because last time they fought, I had Tafa, and I was feeling good. I was feeling good just about until the fight started. When I saw that footwork, when I saw that hand speed, when I saw that power, I don't think it was going to be a good fight for Tafa. And what kind of adjustments is Tafa going to make, you know, going into this fight? Did he lose 30 pounds? Did he get quicker on his feet? I don't think so. He looks like the same exact guy. Austin Lane, watch out for those hands. Plus 190, let's dance. And also, Chepe Mariscal, baby, let's go. Plus 175 against a hometown kid, Jack Jenkins. I don't care where you're at. Chepe Mariscal is coming into town, and he's going to put a whooping on Jack Jenkins. Pressure, accuracy, hand speed, hand work, it's all there for Chepe Mariscal. He's a grueling fighter, and he's going to take this fight into deep waters. I hope Jack Jenkins is ready. I didn't even have him winning his last fight, for crying out loud. So we're going with Chepe Mariscal. We're going to finish off strong with a U.S. Open. We told you guys last week that Coco Gauff is most likely to win this tournament. We got her price when it was right, and now she has made the finals against Sabalenka. Woo! Coco Gauff, let's go, baby. USA! USA! We're ready to roll with Coco Gauff. We're going to keep riding it. Let's go. But on the men's side, we went down. We went down. Jannik Sinner goes down to Alexander Zverev in a crazy five-set match. So long. Jannik Sinner ran out of gas. I liked the price at Jannik Sinner when he was at plus 1,700, plus 1,600. And the guy was rolling. And now it's the same old stuff, guys. Carlos Alcaraz, Novak Djokovic. We're going to see what happens. Hopefully so we get this final, because I want to see these guys beat each other up again. I want to see another five-set magical match, and I want to see who's going to rise to the top. Will it be Djokovic or will it be Alcaraz? Enjoy the match if we get there, guys. Let's enjoy it. You know, Alcaraz has some work to do. Djokovic still has some work to do. But at the end of the day, we will get an Alcaraz-Novak Djokovic U.S. Open final. It's what the world wants. It's what we want to see. It's what they want. So let's go. But if this happens, I'm going with Carlos Alcaraz to win this whole damn thing and defend his U.S. title. Let's go, Carlitos Alcaraz. Vamos, Charlie. We'll see you guys next week. And we're going to tell you guys who won the U.S. Open. And we're going to let you know if the dogs actually hit. So much more with the UFC, the PFL, ONE Championship, Bellator, all on the horizon. All on Hit the Bell with me, Matias Babel. Y'all stay tuned. We will be back next week. Aloha.
You're listening to Hit the Bell with Matias Babel on the Sports Grid Radio Network.